This month is Breastfeeding Month, and Nancy Manister is an assistant professor at Fairfield University School of Nursing who's going to talk to us about the state of breastfeeding in the United States. She's a board-certified family nurse practitioner, and Nancy, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, I'm delighted to be here.
So why do we have Breastfeeding Month?
To bring awareness to this important topic, the World Health Organization has been pioneering breastfeeding promotion for 40-something years, and this gives us an opportunity to talk about breastfeeding and to encourage mothers to breastfeed and for families to support them.
So how are we doing in the United States?
We're actually doing pretty well. Breastfeeding fell out of favor in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. And in the early 1970s, we were at the lowest point in over 100 years, where only 25% of women initiated breastfeeding in the hospital, and maybe 9% were breastfeeding at 3 months. And now we have increased that rate to 79% of women nationally starting to breastfeed in the hospital. And we have 49% of women doing some breastfeeding at 6 months and 27% of women doing some breastfeeding at 12 months. So that's wonderful. But this is a Healthy People 2020 national health objective to increase this number further and encourage more mothers to breastfeed and to breastfeed longer and exclusively.
So your numbers talked about the percentage of women initiating breastfeeding who were in the hospital, but we know that childbirthing centers have a higher rate of breastfeeding. Why are they able to do so much better?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the name.
Childbirthing centers.
Oh, childbirthing centers. I believe that childbirthing centers not only attract a certain clientele, but they are typically staffed by midwives and really approach childbearing as a holistic event. And so there's greater promotion for mother-baby health, and breastfeeding fits right into that.
So you're a practicing family nurse practitioner. I assume that you see women and their families, their young children. Do you see a difference in the women who are breastfeeding versus those who aren't, or in the children who are breastfeeding?
Well, certainly children who are breastfeeding or have been breastfed end up being healthier. For example, children or infants who are not breastfed are hospitalized at twice the rate of infants that are being breastfed. So that's a real staggering number. So, the protection from breastfeeding against colds, viruses, and ear infections is very powerful and important to children's health.
Now, we've long told women that if you can't breastfeed for a long time, at least do it initially, because the colostrum has such valuable stuff in it, and the colostrum is the clear liquid that comes out before your milk actually comes in. Is that still true?
Well, any amount of breastfeeding is wonderful. I would never say to a woman, that's not enough. So any amount is wonderful. But we are really trying to encourage women to breastfeed more exclusively and breastfeed longer. So the current recommendation is that women breastfeed for 6 months without supplementing with any other foods or formula. And then at 6 months, the mother would introduce solid foods and continue breastfeeding for a year or longer. Worldwide, women typically breastfeed for 2 to 4 years.
Yes, somebody in my family recently had a baby, and I asked him, how long his wife was going to be breastfeeding. She breastfed her first, and this is the second. And he said, oh, when he's 1 year. And I said, well, why wouldn't you go longer? Why wouldn't you go to 2 or 3 or 4? And he was like grimaced at the thought of a 4-year-old. He said, that doesn't sound right at all. But indeed, in other countries, that's the norm, isn't it?
That is so true. And so for the United States, This is a culture issue. We're just not used to seeing it. And I think that if we were used to seeing toddlers breastfeeding, it wouldn't be a big deal.
Uh-huh.
What I'm seeing is we have families that encourage a new mom to breastfeed, and then at 2, 3, 4 months, they'll turn around and say to her, "You're not still breastfeeding, are you?" Mm. And so the support falls away. And so we need to provide support to mothers to continue to breastfeed longer.
I know when I meet a pregnant woman, and, you know, if I, assuming I know her, I will often say, "Are you planning on breastfeeding?" And try to reinforce that message. And I think it's an important message for family members to try to give to a young mother and the father as well, I think, needs to be a partner in this. I mean, sometimes when the woman is breastfeeding, you think, well, what does the dad do? Well, they can be very supportive, and can't the woman also express some milk into a bottle from time to time for the father to give?
Absolutely. So we say no bottles, nothing but the breast for 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. And then after the 3-week growth spurt where the baby nurses a lot for a day or two, that's a good time to start pumping once a day so that dad or someone else can give the baby a bottle once a day. It's also a good time to pump a little extra milk and put it in the freezer so that if she wants to run out for a haircut or she wants to get a little extra sleep, there's a stockpile of milk that can be defrosted and used. And then she just pumps and puts it back when, you know, it's convenient.
And how long can you keep milk in the freezer?
Well, if you think about the rules of food, how long can you keep your food in the freezer? Usually it depends on how hard your ice cream is. So if your ice cream is really hard, it can stay for 6 months in a regular freezer and up to a year in a locked freezer that isn't open very often. And we say to put it in the back of the freezer away from the fan, if there's a fan in there.
Now, the other thing you mentioned was this idea of exclusive breastfeeding for 3 months.
For 6 months.
6 months, and introducing food after that. This is a shift, isn't it?
So, traditionally, well, I guess when you and I were babies, we probably had...
We weren't breastfed.
We weren't, and probably got cereal at 6 weeks. And we're finding that the research shows us that the lining of the intestines is not truly developed until 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good reason to delay giving solids earlier. It also increases the risk for allergy when solids are introduced too early.
Mm-hmm.
And so we really want to encourage parents to wait to 6 months to start introducing solids. Sometimes I'll hear a parent say, "Oh, my baby's so big, he's so hungry, he needs more food." But I'd like to point out that that baby got so big because the mother's making so much milk, and the baby's big from breastfeeding and doesn't need extra food at that time. The baby just needs to continue to breastfeed, and then solids come in 6 months.
Now, I often hear of a woman saying, and have been told by women, that, well, I tried, but I had problems. I've also talked with lactation specialists, people who specialize in breastfeeding, who will often say it is the rare woman who cannot breastfeed, that women often lack the kind of supports that you need to learn how to do it. What's your sense of this?
Well, I was a board-certified lactation consultant for 20 years, and indeed what you're saying is true, that for most women, getting some extra support, getting a trained eye to point out what the problem is, makes the difference. And it is the rare woman who just absolutely can't breastfeed. And for some of those women, it's a very sad day because this is something they may have really wanted to do, and it can make them feel rather bad about themselves that it just didn't work out for them. We want to provide support. Support is actually the number one success factor for breastfeeding.
Wow. Now, what kind of support?
So saying, oh, wow, your baby must be having a growth spurt. So the growth spurt's 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 3 months, 6 months. The baby's very hungry for a day or so. So if the family is around her, a non-supportive family would say, wow, that baby's so hungry. You're probably not making enough. Here, give the baby some formula. But a supportive family would say, oh, it's just a growth spurt. Put your feet up. Let me make you something to eat. Breastfeed the baby a little bit more often today. And tomorrow, the next day, the growth spurt will settle down.
Nice, nice. Okay. And so if I'm struggling with breastfeeding, who can I turn to for help?
Well, traditionally, La Leche League, which is a volunteer organization, has supported breastfeeding throughout the United States. There are also International Board Certified Lactation Consultants, IBCLC. They have the most training for breastfeeding and would charge a fee. There are many that make home visits. There is a new category with less training, the CLC, Certified Lactation Consultant. And many hospitals have a trained lactation consultant that would provide expertise and support. There's also online, there's YouTube, and then asking around, maybe before you've even had the baby, who do you know who's breastfed for, successfully for 6 months, a year, 2 years, so that you can identify a person in your circle that you could ask questions of should they arise.
Now, years ago I had on Health Styles Ruth Watson Lubick, who was a pioneer in the childbirthing center movement, and in her last two models, or maybe even in all of the childbirthing centers that she's opened, she has peer breastfeeding consultants, women who have delivered at the center, who then are trained and have breastfed successfully and have been trained in how to support women. It seems like a really great way to go to find somebody who has done this successfully, who might be your coach, your mentor, your buddy in breastfeeding. I like that.
That's an excellent idea. And, I forgot to mention WIC, because for women who receive that benefit, there's often extra breastfeeding support available in the WIC office, and there might even be peer-to-peer counselors available there.
Now, explain what WIC is.
Well, Women, Infants, and Children is a national program that provides support to women with small children or who are pregnant. So during pregnancy, they would provide food supplements, and after delivery, they would provide some education and support for breastfeeding. Unfortunately, they're also the largest purchaser of formula in the entire world and provide free formula to women who can't afford it. And so sometimes that ends up being a little bit of a conflict, and it also undermines breastfeeding confidence. If you can get free formula, sometimes someone might say, wow, I don't want to turn down that very valuable benefit and just accept the free breastfeeding. But breastfeeding is so superior.
Or the free formula, you mean, except the free formula. Yeah.
The free formula, yeah. So that's a problem.
Yeah. So I'm interested in has anything changed because of the Affordable Care Act? I know now the Affordable Care Act requires that insurers pay for a breast pump for new mothers. Is there any movement towards requiring that whoever provides the obstetrical services, the maternity services, or early child care also provide lactation support?
That is not in the legislature. What we are seeing is there's a movement towards hospitals to be designated as baby-friendly. This is a program that's been around for 40-plus years from the World Health Organization. And when a hospital applies to be baby-friendly, they're saying, we're not going to give infants formula unless it's medically necessary. We're not going to accept free formula to give out to our patients. We are going to provide help and support to mothers. We're going to show mothers how to breastfeed after the delivery. And so if someone was shopping for a hospital, they might say, wow, do you have the baby-friendly hospital designation?
Now, many women search for a midwife or an obstetrician, and that's what drives where they go. So an implication here might be that when you decide on who your maternity care provider will be, whether an obstetrician or a midwife, that you're asking them, where will I deliver? And if it's in a hospital, is it a baby-friendly hospital? And if not, to think twice about delivering at that hospital.
That's a thought. Or if let's say you really like the provider, but the hospital is not a baby-friendly hospital, then knowing the baby-friendly standards and then asking, well, will there be a lactation consultant available to me?
Great. And so somebody can Google baby-friendly hospitals and see what the standards are and which hospitals are baby-friendly?
Absolutely. There's a lot online about baby-friendly hospital initiative.
And what's your go-to source for updated information on breastfeeding that consumers might be interested in, our listeners might be interested in?
Well, certainly anything that's put out by the International Lactation Consultant Association, so that's ILCA, I-L-C-A. The CDC has some great information about breastfeeding that they have out. La Leche League has always been a great source of information. So I would pick those three.
Great. Well, this is really helpful information and important, I think, as we try to encourage women to understand the importance and families to understand the importance of breastfeeding to not only the woman and to that maternal child bond, but also to that infant and having a healthier baby. So Dr. Nancy Manister, I want to thank you so much for being on our program today. Nancy Manister is the Assistant Professor of Nursing at Fairfield University School of Nursing and Board Certified Family Nurse Practitioner. Thank you so much, Nancy.
Diana, thank you so much for having me talk about this important topic.
You've been listening to Health Styles. I'm Diana Mason, one of the producers of this program that's brought to you by the Center for Health, Media, and Policy at Hunter College, City University of New York. You can follow us online on our blog at www.centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. That's centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. Have a great day.